Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 262. And in 1 Corinthians, in this epistle, the Apostle Paul is writing to the congregation, telling them about the part that every one of them plays, because God placed them in that position and gave them talents and abilities, and they should share it with one another, not boast about it, not hinder one another. And it's very important to realize that he's not writing this letter, as well as many other letters to the ministry. You see, some of them were specifically to them, like Timothy, or Titus, or Philemon, you know, particular persons. But generally speaking, all of his writings were to the churches, to the entirety of the congregation, for all of them to read it, just like God wrote his law with his own hands, with his own finger, for all of Israel. He didn't write it for the priesthood or for Moses, you see. And whenever he gave him a message, he says, you go tell Israel. He didn't say, you go tell the leadership. And so it has been to this very day. And yet a lot of leaders have not understood that, because they were hungry for power, and therefore they grab everything to themselves, and they get to the point where they are so arrogant and haughty, you know, with an ego the size of the universe, where they claim that God speaks only to me and to, you know, through me to you. God has never done that, generally speaking. You see? And when he speaks to the prophets, it's not for his own sake. And there are places, obviously, when he speaks to the prophets, and then, you know, the prophet goes and delivers it to Israel. But the intent is, you go tell it to Israel, just like when the Apostle Paul, when he writes a letter, obviously it reaches somebody, you see, he has to address it to someone, in terms of the letter arriving at somebody's home, yet that person is supposed to go and give it to the church. It's not for himself, you see, to summon all the leaders and get into a room, back room, whatever, and they all talk about it, and then whatever they want, they tell the congregation. It didn't work like that. It hasn't been that way from the beginning of life, and nor will it ever be again, you see, as the world does it, because that's not God's way. After all, this is his people, that's his bride. He talks directly to her, but obviously in between, there is somebody, sort of an intermediary. And it's not up to that person to be a bottleneck, you know, for the truth of God. And yet, that's what many do. They do not allow others to grow, to mature, to overcome. And so they hinder all the gifts and the talents that God had given to the congregation. And they're creating bad attitudes and bad feelings among the brethren. And they turn against one another because of that, because of that spirit that the leadership is promoting, and so forth. And so the Apostle Paul is making it very plain how it should be, to people that did not know how God works. And so in verse 28 he says, or verse 27, let's backtrack. Now you are the body of Christ and members individually. So he's writing to them, to the body of Christ. And each one of you, even though all together you are the body, still you are, each one of you is an individual member and therefore should be treated as such. You see? Within the body. Not as a nobody. You see? Not as a little screw in the big machine. But as an individual member of that body, having a talent and an ability, and therefore she'll be honored and respected by all. And when everybody does it to everybody else, then there is no issue there. And so he says in verse 28, and God has appointed, God is the one, the Father, the head of the family. You see, he didn't say Jesus Christ, but he said, God has appointed this in the church, first apostles, you see, and second prophets, third teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, administrations, varieties of tongues, you see. So God is the one, ultimately speaking, even though he gives everyone a talent and ability, still he didn't make everybody an apostle, everybody a teacher, you see, everybody a prophet. So people should not seek it, and they should not vie for it if God hasn't given it to them. And they should not be jealous that others have it and they don't. You see? So even though he gave everybody a talent and an ability, whichever it may be, still within that reality, we must recognize that God also appoints leaders in certain positions, and yet their position is not to bottleneck the truth or to exercise dominion and authority over others or to stifle the ability and the talents and the gifts that God had given to others. You see, controlling it, telling them, you know, you speak only what I tell you to speak. You see, why not in charge of the Holy Spirit? God is. And yet men have taken They've taken it oftentimes upon themselves to be in charge of God, in charge of the Holy Spirit, in charge of the truth. And that's how, unfortunately, the church gets scattered and confused and oppressed and stifled, you see, and stagnates. And then people, other people, learn to do the same, follow the leaders, and so they begin to oppress one another and smite one another. As Christ said, you know, it is coming, you know, that there are going to be those servants who are going to rise and smite one another, saying, well, the Lord delays his coming, I can get away with it, things like that. And so we have to understand the entirety of the story. God gave everybody a talent and ability. Everybody should be able to express it, yet within harmony and unity, not in a selfish manner, you see. And still remember, there are still leaders, because some people go from one extreme to the other. Since we all have talents and abilities, I don't need you. I don't need an apostle. I don't need a teacher. I don't need a prophet. I don't need a minister. You see, we don't need any of that. Well, that's not of God either, to go from one extreme to the other. You see, that's people who are rebel rousers, who are using the liberty that God gives them as a license to do evil. You see, to behave in an evil manner, in a rebellious manner, you see, where they're not willing to accept any authority whatsoever. Well, again, that's what the Apostle Paul is saying here. Beside all the talents and abilities that God gave you, that nobody should stifle it, God also appointed, you see, the father, the head of the family, that's his will. He appointed in this church apostles and prophets and teachers and those who are going to perform miracles. He didn't give it all to one person. Gifts of healings, not everybody was doing it. Helps, administrations, varieties of tongues. So still, everybody has their function and their part in the church, but still, within that, there is going to be also a group of people who are going to be teaching and, giving messages. That's what an apostle is, a messenger, so he has to go and give messages all over the place. And then there are those who, on a daily basis, you see, are teachers. They have to teach what the prophets have said. You know, they have to teach the message of the apostle that was sent to them, teach it to the brethren, and then allow the brethren to use all the talents that God gave them. And when all learn to function in that manner, as a mature adults instead of little children playing games, with the toys that God gave them, and so they have confusion, you know, my gift is better than yours and things like that, or envy and jealousy and malice and all those kind of things that you find among people having human nature, well, obviously, then you have confusion, as God is not the author of confusion. And so he says, for those people who do not understand that, this whole reality of both, everybody has a talent and yet their leaders are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles. Of course not. Therefore, not everybody can say, well, you know, I don't need you. I can be my own apostle, I can be my own teacher, I can be my own prophet. I can be my own worker of miracle, you know. I can go and anoint everybody I want. I don't need you for that. That's not God's way either. You see, so we have to be mature not to go from one extreme to the other. But when we take things upon, you know, into our own hands that God hasn't given to us, well, God is not going to be in it. And yet some people don't understand that. They think, well, you know, anybody can do it. You know, James says, you know, if you have an ailment, affliction, whatever, call on the elders. You see, and they'll come and anoint you. You see, who are the elders? Well, the elders are the ones that the apostles have ordained in accordance with the will of God, just like Israel, in accordance with the will of God, have ordained the tribe of Levi to serve in their stead. You see, they had to lay hands on them. The leaders of the congregations obviously couldn't get the whole nation to do it, but they did it in their name, you see, and then they were doing their job, and so it is with the elders. The congregation lays hands on them, you know, the leadership and the congregation lays hands on them, you see, you know, the congregation in essence chooses, because they know those guys, and then they, you know, those in charge of the congregation, as the apostles give the example, as Moses did, you call on those people that you know are going to serve you from the heart righteously, I'll ordain them. So did the apostles say exactly the same, following the footsteps of Moses. You choose men among you that you know are men of good reputation and character and things like that, and we'll ordain them. And so it was the example in every congregation. It's not that the leadership does it on their own, they couldn't care less about the brethren, so there is a participation there among all, but then once they have been ordained, you have to accept their in essence, the authority that is given to them from God, You see, by the laying on of hands. As God told, that is, as Paul told Timothy, you know, don't be bashful about using that authority that was given to you by the laying on of hands, you know, by the presbytery, that means by the elders. And so they're the ones that were called upon to anoint. Now, there are some cases where there are not any elders around that have been ordained, so God, you know, is not going to be at this point choosy in terms of, you know, if a father, you know, anoints his daughter, there is nobody around to do it. God is going to accept it now and then. But, you know, those are exceptions. But generally speaking, when we have a congregation, a group, we have to learn the law of God. We have to abide by the law of God. We have to walk in the law of God and not do our own things. And yet a lot of people do their own things, especially little groups, you see. And they have no intention of ever growing and maturing and doing things God's way. Well, that's a problem. Because I have to realize if they're not doing it God's way and it's not pleasing in His sight, He's not going to be in it. So why do you waste your time anointing people that God is not going to listen to your prayers? You see, unless you know there are special circumstances where you have no ordained elders around that have been appointed for the purpose, you see. And so that's what He's saying here, you know. Can any one of you just make yourself an apostle or a prophet or a teacher or workers of miracles? Do all have the gifts of healings? If you don't, why are you in the business of healing? In other words, you're anointing people as if God has given you that ability to do so, or that quality, or that gift. You see, it's a gift that God gives to us. We don't take it upon ourselves. We don't invent it. And if God didn't give it to us, you know, we can anoint anybody, even though if we've been ordained. If God didn't give it to us, even then, that would mean nothing. You see? So it has to be not only in accordance, you know, because of the leadership you know, has been, that is, had ordained certain people to do it, but also has God approved of those people? Because if he's not approving of those, as Paul said, God has appointed this in the church. Well, that person, maybe an elder, he can anoint all he wants, nothing's going to happen. So all those things have to be taken into account. And when we seek to worship God and worship Jesus Christ with all of our being and heart and obey His law, then obviously we do all things right. What happens when we want to do our own things? And unfortunately, that's what he has to deal with here. People wanted to do their own thing also. And so he's saying to them, otherwise there is no reason to write all these things if there was no problem there. It says, do all have the gifts of healings? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? Not everybody can do it unless God has given them the ability to do it. But earnestly, he said, desire the best. You see, all of you, desire it. Don't be shy from it. He said, desire the best gifts. And yet I show you a more excellent way. So whatever the best gifts are, you can desire them, you can ask God, but if He doesn't give it to you, acknowledge it. You see, don't pretend that you have something which God didn't give you. And so he said, with all those best gifts, you know, and enumerated some of them, you see, he said, there is still a way that is more excellent than anybody can have it, in essence. And that's when he goes into the famous chapter that people call it, you know, the chapter of love. It's not a chapter of love, it's just a continuation of his writing to there. To them, that is, you know, he doesn't write, well, chapter so-and-so and verse so-and-so, obviously. You know, when you write a letter, that's the way you write a letter. It's just the whole thing, you know, one sentence follows another. And so now we go to the famous chapter, and we have to have a background for it, because this is, the one that is called the chapter of love or charity. You see, you have to understand, as God told Moses to tell Israel, hear, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, therefore you shall love the Lord your God with all of your might and heart and soul, you see. And then later on somebody asked Jesus Christ, what is the greatest commandment? And he replied, hear, Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and then you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and might and soul and mind, you see. All these four, as we talked about them before that, as I call them, the four engines of love or the four engines of the human spirit, you see. And then Jesus Christ said, if you love me, keep my commandments, you see. And Paul explained what that nature of love, when he gave a definition, love works no ill to his neighbor in Romans chapter 13, verse 10. Therefore, he said, love is the fulfilling of the law. That's the equation. Love is the fulfilling of the law. So what love is he going to talk about here? You see? As Christ would tell every single one of us, you know, you love me, keep my commandments. That's the only way I know that you love me. It's as simple as that. Or as John said later on, by this we know that we love him because we keep his commandments and do those things which are pleasing in his sight. You see? And the Apostle Paul, who is writing this, he's not a Protestant, so he's not talking about a Protestant concept of love. He's not a Catholic, so he's not talking about a Catholic concept of love. He's not a Gentile, and he's not talking about the Catholic, you know, the Gentile, you know, concept of love. And he's not a man that came from the world, knowing nothing about the law of God, and therefore he brings us the worldly concept of love. You know, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. They're not talking about love as a fulfilling of the law. This is not what is on their mind. So we have to understand the background of the Apostle Paul, who was called in his days Rabbi Saul. He was a Jew, a Pharisee, a son of a Pharisee by his own admission, to the end of his life. So what is the context and the background? What is the background of the Apostle Paul? What's on his mind when he makes this kind of statements? And when people don't look into that, investigate, you see, check the context and the background, then, you know, they begin to read this chapter and they wax eloquently about it, and millions of sermons have been spoken about this subject here by so many, and the overwhelming majority of them were people who had contempt for the law of God, which is the very equation that Paul talks about. Love works no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. So, with this background in mind, then you can begin to understand it. And if you don't have it, you don't know what you're talking about, either preaching about it or reading it, you see, or whatever. So before we serve this food, you know, the spiritual food of love, you see, be it, you know, if we're a teacher, a preacher, whatever, or just reading it, or, you know, just sharing it with others, you see, just like, you know, the waiter that comes and brings you a beautiful dish, you know, puts it on your table, he has to make sure first that the dish has been washed from, you know, the former customer, you know, all the dirt that he left behind. You see, when people don't do it, what happens? You know, they bring, you know, the dirty dishes. In other words, they're all concepts and ideas into this knowledge of love, into this chapter, into these words here, and they mix it together, and they obviously get a totally different message, which is very unfortunate. So let's remember this background as we read this. And so the Apostle Paul tells the Corinthians, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels. Now, he speaks with the tongues of men, but he's not speaking with the tongues of angels, because he had the gifts of tongues, you see. But he says, even though I speak, it doesn't mean that, yeah, I do. You see, he obviously didn't speak in every man's tongue. You see, he didn't know all the languages on the face of the earth, you know. He knew his languages, you know, Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. And then when God gave him the ability to speak in tongues now and there, when there was a need for it, he did it, you see. But he says, even though I may speak in all the tongues of man and all the tongues of angel, and some people think, well, he was speaking in the tongues of angels. No, he was not. He didn't say I was. He just said, even though I do, you see, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging symbol. So, I can, you know, speak in tongues. I can claim I have the Holy Spirit. I can say I'm the apostle of God. But if I'm a person who does not obey the law of God, as I said earlier, circumcision is nothing, uncircumcision is nothing but the commandments, but the keeping of the law. You see? But the commandments, you see? Keeping the commandments. That's what counts. That's what he's saying here. What happens when you don't have that kind of a background? Well, you invent your own concept of what he's talking about. You know, this sweet, nice, sentimental, mushy type of love. He's not talking about that. He says, unless you are obedient to the law of God that tells you exactly what to do and what not to do in the bedroom, in the living room, in the kitchen, in the neighborhood, you know, with everybody and toward God, you can have all the gifts of tongue, you know, in the world. That means nothing. You see, that's what God said, Jesus Christ said, if you love me, keep my commandments. Otherwise, it's all in vain. You worship me in vain. That's exactly what he's saying here. He's repeating the message of Moses and all the men of God who loved God with their whole being and heart by obedience to his law and seeking to do all those things which are pleasing in his sight, which is in accordance with his law. You see? That's what he's saying here. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, you know, I can have a lot of PhDs and I know so much about prophecy and about this and about that and all kind of technicalities and details, and people are impressed with me and I go and give lectures and everybody say, oh, what a great man of God. He says, I can do all that. And though I have all faith, it's one of the greatest weightier matters of the law, as Christ said. What are the weightier matters of the law? And he mentioned some of them, and faith was one of them, and you see. And he said, you know, I may have all faith, because some people say, like Martin Luther and his ignorance, a rebel against the law of God, who didn't know, you know, had no clue whatsoever what love is. He thought he did. He thought he was a follower of Christ, and he was not. He was a follower of the devil. And all those who follow in his footsteps are following the same spirit. And he says, I don't need to obey the law of God. I just live by faith alone. Well, Paul says, you can have all the faith in the world. But if you do not have love, which is the fulfilling of the law, you are nothing, nobody. That's what he would have said about Martin Luther had he encountered him. And all his vomit and vile and, you know, cesspool of teachings that he gave to others. And he got a whole church named after him. And people in their ignorance and blindness are idol worshippers to this very day, and they think that they are the people of God. You see? So he says, I may have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, which is the fulfilling of the law, I am nothing. And that's what that person is in the sight of God and all his followers. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, which is possible, people do it, yet they've got an ulterior motive. You know, they want a plaque, they want to be patted on the shoulder, they want to be credited, they want people to think good of them, and people will go to a great extent to achieve that. So he says, talking about this kind of people, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and people can go that far too, all for show, because they yearn so much for recognition that they're willing to do anything. So he said, I can do all that, but I have not love. I don't have that nature of God, which is a fulfilling of his nature, you see, of his character, expressed through his law. If I don't have that, he said, it profits me nothing. And that's why when people come to Jesus Christ at the end, seeing that the door is shut before them, and they knock at the door and they say, Lord, Lord, you know, we too are your people. We've proclaimed your name. We've done things in your name. We've performed signs and wonders in your name. You know, we preach your name. You see, we went all over the world, you know, missionary activities that we had, you know, we were willing to suffer so much for it. We were destitute, you see, we were naked, we were willing to sacrifice and all that, all in your name. And he tells them, I don't even know you. Get out of here, you workers of iniquity, lawlessness. You had no love. Oh yes, you gave your body to be burned. You gave all your goods to the poor. You had a lot of faith, but you didn't have love. And love is a fulfilling of the law. So all these things didn't do them any good. That's what he's saying here. It profits me nothing. And then he explains the nature of love. Love suffers long and is kind. Because when you love your neighbor as yourself, you're kind to yourself. You're not harsh to yourself, unless, you know, you've got a problem, mental problem. You know, some people are very hard on themselves. That's not a healthy state of mind. But generally speaking, you know, people are kind to themselves. They're kind to their own, those who are part of their empirical self, you see, but they don't like others. And so it says, love suffers long, not only your own mistakes and your own failings and shortcomings, but those of others, and is kind. Love, you see, which is the fulfilling of the law, that does no ill to a neighbor or to self, love does not envy. You don't envy yourself when you are exalted to a higher position. Why would you envy somebody else? You see, why? You don't, because you love your neighbor as yourself. You are obeying the royal law, you see. And so love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It's not puffed up. You don't need to boast and be arrogant and do all kind of things like that, because you're not therefore in an ulterior motive. You are doing it because you love God, and therefore you love his children. You see, so you don't need to boast about all those things that God had given you or man had given you. You see, so you are not puffed up by it. You are not haughty and arrogant. Love does not behave rudely. You're not going to treat yourself rudely, you see, because you love yourself. That's the law of God. Therefore, you're not going to treat others rudely. It does not seek its own. It's not selfish. It's not provoked. Thinks no evil. You don't think evil of yourself. You know, when you do all kind of things like that, why would you think evil of others? You see? Well, if you don't, it's because you love your neighbor as yourself. Because love works no ill to a neighbor, and therefore love is a fulfilling of the law. And this is what he's trying to make them understand, the nature of love, the nature of the law of God. That's the reason for this series, because people have been deceived as to the nature of law, the law of God. They've been taught that the law is harsh, strict rules, regulations, given by the old monster, you know, some people used to call him in the past, the wrathful God. To the Jews, we don't want to have anything to do with it. We'll just live by faith, by grace. Jesus loves me. What does that mean? You see? People don't understand that, so they've got a vain religion. And so Paul is trying to explain to people, and otherwise, you know, at the same time, if you don't have the background to what he's talking about, you really don't understand. So you can go through that all you want, millions of times, you'll never understand what he's talking about. You see? And so you have to have it to understand the whole matter, you see. As Solomon would say, he that speaks before he knows the whole matter is a fool. A lot of people are a bunch of fools. And they call themselves ministers of the gospel, so, or, you know, whatever other ranks they have, when they do not understand the whole matter. And so he says, love does not rejoice, in verse 6, in iniquity. What is iniquity? Lawlessness. If love is a fulfilling of the law, how is it going to rejoice in iniquity? You see, and yet a lot of people rejoice in iniquity. They rejoice in the fact that, you know, the law is done away with. We don't need it. Christ did it for us. Nailed to the cross. It's not for us. It's Jewish. We don't like it. You see? And they went to the point where they burned the Bible, you know, the so-called what they thought was a Jewish Bible, which is the word of Jesus Christ himself. You see? They rejoice in iniquity in so many ways. They burned synagogues and burned the Jews that were in the synagogues. And they burned many others who read the Bible. They burned them at the stake. They called them heretics. Of course, they don't do it now. But the contempt for the law is still there and is being preached. And people rejoice in that. Oh, I don't need to live by the law of God. I just live by grace and I live by faith. And they rejoice in that. Well, love does not rejoice in iniquity, lawlessness, but rejoices in the truth. You see, in contrast to that, what is the truth? As David would say, your word, your law is truth. That's what truth is. That's what Christ said, I am the truth. I'm the epitome of the law. You see, I'm the epitome of those teachings which reflect the nature and the character of God. I am the way, I'm the light, I'm, you know, the path. And if you don't know the law of God, you do not walk in it. All this becomes ethereal to you. And, you know, you just do certain things that you think, you know, and you understand, well, which are good, you know, well, be like the Good Samaritan, be kind to people. Okay, well, that is nice and good, but it's only a small part of the picture. You've got to have the entirety of it, you see. And so he says, love bears all things, believes all things. He's not malicious, you see. You're not malicious about yourself. When you do certain things, you know what was the intent there. Others don't, so you're not malicious toward yourself, you see. And since love works no ill to a neighbor, since you don't work ill to yourself, you see, therefore love is a fulfilling of the law. And therefore it's not going to, you know, in other words, attribute ill motives to other people. And a lot of people do it. They do all kind of things. They say all kind of things. And we immediately, we think that we know what they meant by that, and we attribute, you see, to them, ill motives. And that's not reality. That's not love. So love bears all things, believes all things, does mean, you know, you're a fool, you know, you believe anything, whoever, anybody who says about this or that or the other thing. What it means is, you're not a person of bad faith, but of a good faith. If a person says, look, I didn't do it, or I did it, or this and that, you believe them. Well, if they're found to be liars, they're going to be condemned, you know, by the truth. But you don't need to walk around, you know, just suspicious of everybody and put down everybody, and don't believe anybody, and always skeptic, you see, like that. That's not love, to treat people like that. Always be suspicious of people. I wonder why a lot of people do not have a good relationship, because they have no mutual trust. Without mutual trust in marriage, in any relationship, which is love, you cannot have a relationship that is a healthy one. You see? Whatever you know, just imagine if you lived in an environment where everybody was suspicious of everybody. What a horrible way of life to live. And a lot of people have that, unfortunately. Well, if you have the nature of love, I don't suspect myself. I don't, you know, claim that, you know, I have ill motives in doing this or that or the other thing. Why should I claim it about others? You know, why should I accuse others of that? You see, you do not want to work ill to your neighbors, either self or somebody else. That's love. And therefore, you believe all things and you hope all things. Hope for the best. Endures all things. You see, when you are willing to love someone as yourself, when you do, you're willing to take an awful lot from a person, from a wife, from a husband, from children, from parents, from friends. We may not be perfect yet, maybe work in that direction, or maybe haven't got to that point where they begin to understand that they have to make some changes. Your love endures. You don't say, you know, what people say, well, to heck with you. Or other words, you know, that they say. Who cares? I don't need you. See what I mean? That's a demonic state of mind, and a lot of people have it, and they easily fall into that state of mind whenever things don't go their way. Who needs you? You see? Get out of here. I don't need you. I'm not going to take any, you know, anything from you. I'm not going to take any slack from anybody. Well, people glorify in this kind of statements. They don't realize that that's the nature of the devil in us. And all of us have it, to one degree or the other. Any time we fall into that state of mind, we have fallen into darkness instead of light. We have fallen into a state of hatred instead of love, which works no ill to a neighbor. You see? And therefore it is love. That's what God is. God is love. That's what it means. God is love. It's not an ethereal concept. You see? And love sometimes is smacking you between the eyes and chopping you to pieces and putting you in the ground. You see? That's where he allows sickness and disease and war and bloodshed. You see? Because he's love, not because he's hatred. And of course, people being confused, they don't know the difference between love and hatred. And so they accuse God, well, if God is a God of love, well, how come? You see? That's because we've been raised by the devil, not by God. His state of mind, his emotions, his feelings, his attitudes. And we confuse it, you see. And we think sometimes that this is love, while the love of God, we think it's evil. And so he says, love never fails, verse 8. Because if that's your nature, that's your mind and character, it's not going to fail. But if it's not, it's going to fail. And so a lot of people, supposedly they fall in love or they fall out of love. How do you do that? You see? If you love, you love. Well, people don't function like that. But whether there are prophecies, it says, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, you know, speaking in tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. All those things, you know, are coming and going, but not love. That's the nature of God. That's why, by definition, he is love. Because God never fails. His nature would never fail. He's not going to turn around and become the devil. But we do it now and then. You know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, we all, you know, have those sides in us. We're nice, 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 and then suddenly something happens we don't like and we become the devil. You know, in other words, we become an adversary and we have negative emotions and feelings. And people do it all the time. That's the reason why you have this, you know, stupid cliche, lovers quarrels. If they are lovers, they do not quarrel. That's as simple as that. You don't find God and Jesus Christ quarreling all the time. Lovers quarrel. There is no such a thing. Either you love or you quarrel. You see? Well, when people have that nature, love never fails. It doesn't mean you don't get angry. God gets angry at us and still loves us. You see, the law even tells us, and the Apostle Paul quoted a law that was previously stated in the Proverbs, in the Psalms, also in different ways. Be you angry, but sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. You see, he was quoting a previous teaching that was there in the law. That's not, you know, it's not a problem to get angry. After all, you know, we'll do things we have no business doing, and it's okay to get angry about it and express it. But your love doesn't fail. And so when we get angry at our children, we should always make it very abundantly clear to them, we still love them. And our anger is not because we don't love them anymore, because a lot of kids, you know, they go to pieces when they think their parents don't love them anymore, when they're angry with them. And I'll explain to them on a repeated basis so they always know it. My dad is angry or my mom is angry with me, not because they don't love me anymore, but because what I've done is hurting me and hurting others. And because they love me, they're punishing me. And when we teach them that from a very young age, then as they grow older and become mature adults, well, they behave in that manner and teach others likewise. You see, love never fails. Other things are going to fail. So he says, all those things are going to cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. You know, this knowledge about this and that and the other thing. But love does not. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect, that is God, who is the epitome of love, who is love, has come, then that which is in part will be done away. As simple as that. That's why he said, this is the most excellent way that I'm going to show you, which is the fulfilling of the law, because love is the fulfilling of the law. And yet people like to read it on one hand, and on the other hand, they still have contempt for the law of God, which is the road to love, which is the definition, which is the way, which is the nature of love. You see, people live an oxymoron life in their theology, in their spiritual behavior and conduct, in their walking with God or with men. And so we're paying the consequences that are all around us. So he says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. You cannot tell a kid, why didn't you grow up? He's a child. Don't expect a child to grow up. You see? It's a process. Then gradually he becomes an adult when you teach him right from wrong and so forth, and he learns the path of love. You see? And some people in our foolishness, because we are not willing to bear all things, endure all things, we want them right here and now. Grow up. Doesn't work. So don't waste your time. Yet we waste our time always telling our kids that way. In their due time, they'll grow up just like we grow up. We don't tell ourselves, grow up. You know, when we made a little boo-boo, a mistake or whatever, we're patient with ourselves. You know, we may be a little bit uptight about it and unhappy and all that. But we're patient with ourselves. Why? Because we love ourselves. Well, how about extending that love to others? That's the nature of love. Once you have learned to love yourself, well, learn to do exactly the same to your neighbor, in that you became a mature person. You see, a person that loves only self is half there, and therefore immature. A lot of people are that way. They love themselves. But God says, you want to be a mature person? You want to be like me? Love others just like as you love yourself, and then the picture is complete. And he gave us a law to show us how to love not only others, but also ourselves, and people don't know it either way. So it says, when I was a child, well, that's the way I was. What else could I do? But when I became a man, I put away childish things. You cannot be a child and a man at the same time. You see, or a child or a woman at the same time. So you cannot play all those kind of games, you know, everything is well, so you're nice, things don't go your way, you become like a child, selfish in your love. You know, you begin to pout, you know, and women seem to be more inclined to do that, unfortunately, because they're more emotionally inclined. And, you know, emotions are wonderful, glorious, beautiful, majestic. It's good to have them, but they should be within the law of God, not apart from it, not in a selfish manner. And all of us are subject to it, be it men or women. Just some are more than others. The more emotional you are, obviously, the more you're going to fly the handle, and you're not going to be in control. Allow the mind, you know, the other engine, or the four engines, you know, the of love and of the human spirit, to give you some input there, you know. Tame down your emotions, you know, think about it rationally and do things right. You see? So he says, for we now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then face to face. You know, we're going to see God in the entirety of the truth for what it is. Now I know in part, then I shall know just as I also am known by God. Then I'm going to understand why this and that and the other thing, and I'm not going to say, well, you know, if God is love, well, how come? Well, because we're ignorant and we think that we know what love is, and therefore we accuse God so easily. And all of us are doing it, if we're not careful about it, when we're in trouble. Now abide faith, hope, love. These are major, weightier matters of the law. These three, he said. But the greatest of these is love. The greatest of these is the fulfilling of the law. So you can be a great man of hope, a great man of faith, but if you're not a great man of love, which includes all this to begin with, because love is the fulfilling of the law, and one of the laws of God is to have faith, you see, and to have hope. That's why love is the greatest. But if you don't know that love is the fulfilling of the law, it becomes an ethereal teaching. Sweet, niceness, sentimental, emotional, mushiness. And that's what it is to most people. You see? So they equate oftentimes love with romance or romantics. Love is when you're dead tired, you can't take it anymore, and the baby is crying when you get up, or your husband, or your son, or your daughter, or whatever, or your brother, you get up anyway in the middle of the night, and you don't feel like it at all, and you serve them and you help them. That's love. That's not romance, you see. Now, when it comes to times of romance, you see, then obviously situation is different. And that too is love. But to equate love, you know, with romance or sweet, nice feelings, you see, in my heart, and that's all. You don't understand love. You have to understand the four dimensions of love. The laws of the mind, the rationale, you see, and all, and the passion and the desire and the energy and the emotions and feelings and all that, all put together, you know, and synchronized and perfectly attuned, you know, to each other. You have the totality of love, you know, of love, and that's what God was. He's a totality of it. Perfect in all these areas, not lopsided, you see, in the wrong way. Because there is a time to show more love in terms of emotions, and there is a time to show more love in terms of a heart, of a mind, that is. Yeah, I know that, you know, that's the way it feels, but, you know, I realize it's not a good idea, so not now. We're not going to do it this way, you see. I love you very much, but I'm sorry. The mind tells me I have to cut your leg off, because otherwise you're not going to die from gangrene, you see. And there's a battle there between the emotions and the rationale and the reason. And the ultimate nature of love will tell you there's a time to do this and there is a time to do that. That's what Paul is trying to explain. And so he says in chapter 14, verse 1, pursue love and desire spiritual gifts, but especially that you may prophesy. You see? And what is he talking about? After he talked about love being the greatest, is he saying now, oh no, forget all about it, prophecy is more important? No, he says, you know, when you desire spiritual gifts, especially that you may prophesy, in other words, teach people. That's what prophecy is talking about, to prophesy, to teach, to preach. Teach them righteousness. Teach them the nature of love. Teach them truth. Teach them the nature of God, the mind of God. You see, that's what's very important. And while you're doing it, practice it yourself. Otherwise, it's all in vain. Others, you know, may benefit from it, but where would you be? And that's what Paul said, you know, I may strive very hard, I may work very hard, but, you know, if I don't do my part myself, you see, just preach to others, I myself may be a castaway, you see. So it's important to understand all the facets of this reality. And he said, for he who speaks in a tongue does not speak to man, but to God. So he's contrasting here two things. One is to speak in tongue, the other one is to teach, prophesy. That's what he's talking about, to teach. Which is more important? You see, because a lot of people, you know, they just want to look spiritual, sound spiritual, and they desire so much to speak in tongue, and then they begin to, you know, have that gibberish, and they call it tongues, which is all, you know, foolishness, or as they call it in New York, baloney. That's all it is. you see, and they confuse themselves and others just to sound, you know, spiritual. That's vanity. He says, you know, better to teach. Teach somebody something that people can understand, that will really benefit them, not just yakking, you know, and saying something nobody knows what you are saying. So it says, for he who speaks in a tongue does not speak to men, but to God. You see, so that's between you and God. Men don't benefit from it, for no one understands him. However, in the spirit he speaks mysteries. Well, God understands him, but men don't, so they didn't get anything out of it, so it didn't benefit them. That's why it says better, especially, that you teach, that you prophesy. And so it says, but he that prophesies speaks edification and exhortation and comfort to men. You see, that's the difference. When you prophesy, when you teach, you edify people, you exhort people, you comfort people. But if you just desire to speak in tongues and you think that's the highest thing that you can do on the spiritual level, you didn't do anybody any good. You see, in essence, to them you are worthless. And so it's contrasting one with the other, and yet people still, you know, some of them at least, you know, in the Pentecostal mold, you know, they don't understand that yet. And again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.